Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly.
When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things that you love are checked by experts. Not just any experts, specialized experts. Real people who love this stuff with real hands-on authentication experience.
So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back.
Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other.
With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms. Welcome to Fat Mascara. I'm Jen Sullivan. My co-host is Jessica Matlin, who will be on the mic momentarily when we get to the interview. But if you're new here, this is a podcast where we talk about beauty culture, which, of course, often overlaps with fashion. So the fall 2024 fashion shows wrapped up at the beginning of March, and we haven't really had a chance to talk about them on the show yet. That is going to change. It'll change next week with our guest co-host, Charisse Kenyon, who truly has an encyclopedic knowledge of the beauty looks in fashion campaigns, ad campaigns, all the fashion shows, the red carpet. So I know we're going to get into all of that. But gearing up for that, I thought it was an appropriate time to reignite our love of the runway beauty looks with a classic Fat Mascara interview. It's legendary hairstylist Guido Palau. You know, Guido has come up so many times on the podcast recently. He just did Prada's Fall Winter 2024 show. He also did Dior's Spring Summer 2024 Haute Couture. And he's the genius behind that new Zara hairline that everyone's talking about. You've heard us here mention it a couple times on the show. So this interview that Jess and I did with Guido originally aired in the fall of 2019. It's timeless because we're talking about his life and his inspiration. But in a few instances, you're going to hear us reference some fashion shows that Guido had done, like Marc Jacobs and Valentino. So if you want to look at the images from those, they would be from the spring 2020 season, the shows that were presented in the fall of 2019 when this was recorded. But you don't need to look at them to enjoy hearing about Guido's creative process. So just relax, enjoy his story. Let's get into it.
Okay, guys, we got him. We snatched him.
It's Guido.
I picked him up. Guido is here. I'm so excited. We have wanted Guido on the show for such a long time. You know, I'm calling you Guido. You're Guido Palo, but I just like you're like Cher, Madonna, Guido.
There you go.
He is a hair legend. You know, basically started grunge. Worked with every big designer you can name up.
Every photographer.
Like this is creme de la creme, A plus list. We got Guido in the studio.
Welcome.
God, what an introduction.
You like that?
Yeah, I loved it.
Also, guys,
I love the Cher Madonna reference.
Perfect. It's his first podcast.
Podcast virgin.
I love that. Like, I have to be like a little self-congratulatory. You don't do a lot of interviews. You come to New York, like, I mean, you live in New York, but you do like the press thing like 2 days out of the year, if that, right?
Yeah.
And then, sorry.
No. You're right. I don't do a lot of interviews.
And then, like, yeah, backstage, we're all frightened to talk to you because you've got, you know, a million people in your ear, and you also have to create, like, a sculpture for, you know, Marc Jacobs. but it's very exciting to have you here. But I got to go back to the beginning. Why did you want to become a hairdresser?
It was actually...
You're pretty good at it.
But it wasn't something I kind of like. I wasn't like a little boy in sort of this, my small town in the south of England, sort of brushing dolls. It wasn't my, I didn't really think about it. There was an inkling of like interest in the way people looked. I was interested in style, but I didn't know back then that's what it was. Do you know what I mean?
And you weren't
poring
over Vogue.
No, I was intrigued. You know, it was a very different time. It was early 70s. I was born in 62. So when I started to sort of look at people, 12, 13, I knew there was something. I was attracted to like David Bowie. I was attracted to sort of like popular culture. That name wasn't around then. But, you know, I was sort of aware of sort of like visual things. It's a very different time. You weren't sort of bombarded by things, you know, and you weren't aware of how the fashion industry worked. I mean, the fashion industry was a very different thing then.
Oh, we'll get to that.
It was still kind of in its infancy. But sort of growing up in a small seaside town, it was a town that people used to come to on holiday weekends from London, and young people, and they seemed more stylish, more sophisticated, and I was attracted to it. But I didn't really know that would be, you know, I was formulating myself kind of thing. I was a regular high school, and I really didn't do well there. Mm. I didn't fit in. I was the kind of, you know, the odd bod, and I couldn't sort of like fit in, and I ended up not going to school a lot. And so hence, yeah, I sort of felt I wouldn't really do very much. You know, I didn't really have a great projection for myself, and nor did my dad didn't either. You know, I think I was the least likely.
For yourself?
Yeah.
For you.
You know, I think I was the least likely to. And I still feel today, skipping ahead, when I hear how hard it is, especially in America, kids trying to get into school and colleges and the pressure to succeed in an academic world. I feel that's like something, I mean, back in the 70s in England, it wasn't that. But if you didn't fit into a mold, you didn't sort of, it didn't work. And I didn't fit into any of those molds. Yeah. And there was no teachers or sort of adults to sort of guide me. So
did
I
you feel crappy about it? You're just like, I don't want to.
Yeah, I did feel. I didn't know how I'd fit in. And I obviously... Yeah. You know, was dealing with my kind of sexuality in a very young age, not being able to express myself in that way either in that time. Do you know what I mean? So there were lots of things going on inside of me that I couldn't really get out. And I didn't really know how I was going to sort of, you know, mm-hmm. go on this, you know.
But you think that it's funny. I'm thinking about another podcast that I listened to. The author, Bret Easton Ellis, he always asks his guests, what were you like in high school? And like, what was the moment? Like, what made you a creative? Because he feels that there's like a thread, like a through line with all very successful creative people, that there was a moment of hardship or a period of hardship. Was that your period of hardship?
Yeah, I think it was. And I think it was like, you know, I was sort of creative in my head. I think I went into my head a lot, and I created this sort of world in a way to escape. I mean, listen, it wasn't terrible, but I did live in my head, you know. And I think later on in life, I create in my head. Do you know what I mean? It was sort of like a way of how I sort of began creating. But going back, hairdressing wasn't something I was like, it was almost something I wanted to get away with, because I didn't really want to identify with, you know, because it felt like effeminate men were hairdressers. And I was going through a weird kind of, you know, that sort of period of myself. I mean, anyway, sort of move fast forward to when I was sort of 16, 17. I'd left school. I didn't have any grades. I didn't have anything. I sort of traveled around, went to Europe, and I was hitchhiking and doing odd jobs. And one of the girls I met was a hairdresser. And I thought, I could do that. I didn't really know what else to do. I moved back to England and applied to Vidal Sassoon for an apprenticeship. In England, you don't go to beauty school. You go to a salon, and you're an assistant for 3 years. And in the evenings, you do night classes and learn. That's how we do it there. Anyway, I didn't get on very well there. even though I love the aesthetic of Sassoon's, I didn't sort of like meld well with the sort of like their training and the way it was. It was very rigid. And
you were kind of doing your own thing.
Well, I was
remember
a little
like
bit
getting in trouble or anything.
Yeah,
or
I was. I was sort of playing around. I was a little bit older. You know, normally you go and start sort of beauty school at 16 or something, and I was sort of 20 by this stage. But I'd done that bit of traveling, so I was a little bit older and probably like insecure and mouthy and saying the wrong thing. You know, I was. You know, I was still sort of like.
Did you last all 3 years?
No, I didn't. I lasted for about 18 months there, left there or got fired. And, you know, it was funny because later on I went...
Did Mr. Sassoon do it?
No, he didn't. But later on, he became a fan of my work and I interviewed him. And he interviewed me for a V magazine article. And how, you know, even in that short period, how Sassoon really formulated a lot of my aesthetics. And it was very interesting that... And he interviewed me and I said, well, I got fired. And he said, well, I heard that you did. And, you know, it was a funny, and we became not friends, but he was, you know, I was a huge admirer of what he did in the 60s. And he became a huge admirer. I was so flattering that, you know, that happened. You know what I mean?
Really
he was
cool.
Such a legend. I got fired by Sassoon's. I went to another salon in London. And it was there when I was working in another salon that a young girl was going out to do a job on a small magazine, a sort of weekly magazine. And I carried her bags and then went, I didn't really know much about it. And it was there that I sort of really sort of felt at home in the studio with other creative people and felt I could really, I mean, I didn't know it that on that day, but I felt it was very an environment I could work in.
Being on set.
Being on set and seeing the creative process of creating characters and beauty and all that. And so I very much sort of went back and quickly left the salon in a way and found an agent and then started my journey.
And so when do you think you arrived? Was it that moment when you're like, wow, I'm interviewing Mr. Sassoon and he's interviewing me? Or was there a particular project you worked on where you're like, okay, I think I can make a living of this. I'm doing okay.
Well, funnily enough, you know, yes, there have been great moments in my career, but I think even to this day, I feel like, have I arrived? Have I made it? You still never, I never feel, I don't know if you're a creative, maybe you never feel that you've really arrived. There's been some great moments. I've ticked a lot of the boxes or all the boxes I wanted to do in my career. I never thought it would take me to where it's taken me, but still every day I'm insecure about my work and what I do. So, yes, there's been seminal moments in my career that I've really like, wow, that was amazing. Mm-hmm. But it never like, oh, it's amazing. That's when I'm fine. I'm done. I'm sort of at this level. It's not going to go away. I always feel maybe being in a business that is sort of like always looking for the next new thing or, yeah. You know.
You don't want to rest on your laurels.
Yeah, never rest on my laurels.
That's a good point. It is always about the next new thing. You mentioned the fashion world when you were like a young kid, how it was very, you know, we didn't have the exposure that we have today, which is like, you know, everyone's fashion adjacent, it seems, and they know exactly how it works. How do you, when you look at how the fashion world has changed, what do you feel inside?
When I started in the early 80s in the fashion business, it was the beginning of like street style being reported on, real people being put into magazines like ID, The Face in England, these two street style sort of magazines, and all kind of like club culture being reported on. It was a really exciting time. And then the fashion industry picking up on all of that. I mean, it was a small industry. It was like, back then it felt more grand and private and sort of like you didn't know what was behind the sort of big doors of Vogue House. Do you know what I mean? It was like a cathedral to fashion in a way. Now, as we all know, it's you can read about it, it's exposed, everybody knows about it. I mean, you can't say that was a better time. It's a different time. Do you know what I mean? The industry's changed a lot and it's a huge business. When I started in the business, I didn't know it was a business. I just thought it was a creative thing. You know, you didn't hear about the commerce of the industry. That hadn't really started to sort of show itself. And no, then it became a commerce. You know, you sort of realized you were selling bags and you were part of a commercial industry. Back then it felt like you were part of a like inner sect of sort of like creative people.
where does the money come from for this photo shoot? We don't know, yeah. but we're making magic.
But you didn't really know. It wasn't talked about. It was like, I mean,
that's nobody knew. That's freedom, though. Knew. You get let to be creative because you're not talking about the budget or what you're trying to sell. You just yes. get to be creative. In the course of your career, you mentioned seminal moments. Is there are there any that come to mind or collaborators that you worked with that really stand out? And just this was when I did some of my greatest work with these people.
Well, I think the first collaborator that really stand up was David Sims. And he taught me, you know, I feel I've had so many great teachers along my journey.
For people who don't know, David Sims, a photographer.
Yes, he's a photographer. And he was a very sort of big photographer that kind of, him and another English photographer called Corin Day were the two photographers that kind of broke ground in the early 90s with this sort of grunge movement, which was a sort of a music-led fashion kind of movement that broke down the idea of beauty and what was kind of, before that, we're in the supermodel era, late 80s and all that. And then this new movement came along, very much what's happening now again, do you know what I mean, in mm-hmm. fashion. And it kind of broke people's idea of what was beautiful, who was beautiful, what was beauty. I mean, it's hard to look at it now, but Kate Moss was the pinup of that era. Mm-hmm. And then she seemed alternative and edgy and sort of not the classic beauty. Now we know her as a sort of iconic, famous model. But back then she was like this young girl from a suburban town that was the sort of 360 of a supermodel.
And was David just the photographer of this moment? Is he the one that was capturing a lot of those grunge?
Him and a girl called Corin Day were the two that were leading the way. Mm-hmm. And from that movement, we all got picked up by bigger brands. And it was the sort of vehicle that kind of propelled us into like spotlight.
Did
so
you
say.
Feel like a camaraderie with Kate and David and Corin? Because it was like, wow, like the stuff that we're doing kind of on our own or at a small scale is now being, you know, recognized by the mainstream.
Yeah, no, certainly. You felt you were like in this sort of like kind of edgy band that people were
yeah.
picking up
on. I want to be in that band.
Yeah, I want to yeah. be in that band. And, you know, and we were being called by these huge brands like Calvin Klein was flying us to America. And, you know, it was all like...
You did the hair for CK, what CK1 ad, right?
Yeah, and, you know, the Marky Mark pictures mm-hmm. and all that kind of thing. But we were all brought this sort of like, we were working in a very independent way in London. And then we were all kind of transported to New York and sort of celebrated, do you know what I mean? And
do
sort
you
of
still
given
speak?
This... Well, David, I just spoke to him now. Oh, yeah, well, yeah. Right. I'm his children's godfather, and mm-hmm. we still collaborate, not so much together, but we're still, you know, he's my best friend. And he was the first person that kind of, you know, you need people to encourage you to see things. And he was someone to make me re-look at beauty. I was still kind of looking at sort of America and glamour kind of thing. And he saw me to look at fashion and beauty in a different way. And that's what he was doing in his pictures. And so we kind of created this new idea of beauty, which was, you know, the beginning of my kind of sort of success, really.
So what look has been the most personal to you, or what project? Would you say it was back then with your buddies in the early 90s? Or has there been something since that has a very big place with you?
I mean, I think when you're sort of like, in the beginning of your career and you're much more unfiltered and you don't know what's going on, you're sort of and they always, when you look back, it always feels so special then, and how you created pictures and created hairstyles and how you researched everything. There was a lot more time then. The industry was working at a slower pace, and some of the stories we worked on for magazines would take 10 days, you know, we'd
oh my God,
we'd reshoot things, and, you know, an ad campaign would be 4 days, and a day would be spent with myself and the makeup artist working out the look. You know, it was a much different time.
And forming the deeper relationships. It's so funny. I'm thinking about a shoot we just did the other day, and it was like, it's 5:55. I'm turning, like, you know, I'm unplugging the lamp.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
We have to hustle.
Yeah, no, it was
10 days. I can wrap my head around that. 3 days is crazy.
Yeah. So it feels special when you look back. And what's funny now, I go to work with designers and they've got these images on their mood boards, you know, and it's like, wow. Do you know what I mean? But that was a very special.
Are they ever your images? You're like,
yep, I did that. But they didn't realize.
That's awesome.
Yeah, no, so it's great.
What of the projects that you've done or the looks that you've done do you keep seeing on other people's inspiration boards?
Oh, that's so funny, Chad.
I mean, a lot of that 90s period, you know what I mean, which was went from the grunge kind of period, then it went into a sort of a minimal kind of thing when sort of minimal designers like Helmut Lang and Jill Sander became very popular in the mid-90s. And at this period now, that sort of look is being kind of referenced again. And you sort of see sort of the ads and sort of the sort of editorials we did then. So it's very nice to think, I mean, I've been in the industry quite a long time now.
Does it ever bore you, though? You've had so many references throughout the years. You've created looks that became references for other people. Are you like, oh, here we go again. Where am I going to find something new and fresh? Or are you always being inspired by new things?
I'm always trying to push my own ideas and visions. And I like to sort of like startle myself still. Mm-hmm. So go, is that beautiful? Is that, what is that?
How do you do that? You just like go out there and just like, let me do the craziest thing I can and we'll see if we look, it looks good.
I mean, I think I've got now, I didn't have back then, but I have more cultural references of things that I know how to play off things and I'm sort of more aware of things. I'm not saying it makes my work better because I think sometimes the innocence of when you're working is really kind of what it kind of makes it so special, not knowing so many things. I think now I know a lot of things. I know the industry so well. And to make something feel startling now is a lot harder just in the world we live in. The way images are perceived, it's harder to make a reaction than it was back then. So it's not so easy.
Yeah, it'd be hard to surprise you.
It's funny when you're talking about your hair, like that. I realize that you have been versatile and you are a versatile hairstylist. But in the 90s, it's a very minimalist kind of grungy hair. And looking at your work, it gets very sculptural. It gets very, the word is not cartoonish, but like it gets sculptural. You know, like if we need to do something very abstract, you're the guy. Is it because you're just looking for, you're pushing yourself in that direction? Like, I don't want to go naturalistic. I need to go...
I think I'm always playing against contradiction and what maybe people think I'm known for. Do you know what I mean? So I might do something extremely sculptural. And I even did a book not so long ago with David that looks retouched because I felt that that's how people are looking at things in a very retouched, unreal way. So I wanted to make the hair feel unreal because I felt it was like...
That's the best word, unreal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to make it feel like... Was it something from the future or is it something from the past? And why is it so perfected? Do you know what I mean? So I just wanted it to be I always want beauty to be questionable. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I always want the viewer to look at it and with some questioning point and not just go, oh, that's nice.
Not sure if they love it. Like they look a little bit longer.
Is that nice or is that a nice texture or
like
a
nice
bag?
And pretty, you'd be insulted.
Yeah.
You'd be like,
Because it's so... We know what nice and pretty is. I think for me, it's always been about questioning taste and questioning the viewer to challenge their idea of beauty. It's always been something that's been my sort of button to go to. You know, I always want someone to look and go, is that beautiful? Isn't it? Is that girl beautiful? Or is she, what is, what? Because that's what I'm attracted to. When I was growing up in those years in London, I'd go to nightclubs and there'd be like extreme people and they were like exotic to me, but they were just like suburban girls and boys making themselves up into these characters. But I didn't know them. So when I just looked at them, I was looking at them with like questioning and they were like these amazing kind of people to me. And that's what I wasn't attracted to like Marilyn Monroe and like, you know,
glamour, kind of like classic archetypes.
Yeah, glamour. It didn't ever push anything for me. You know, it was always like the sort of alternative beauty that I was attracted to. So in my work, even now I do many things, it's always that kind of questionable edge. Like, and it can be a small thing that rocks my world. Like, is the texture right? Or is that purposely bad? Is it purposely bad that you see that? Is that cut too short or is it right? It's always the thing.
The tension in there is what makes it interesting.
The tension that's really important to me. And I try and get that in the work, even if it is glamorous. Like a while back, I did a show with Kaia Gerber, and I made her huge.
Oh, the Valentino Couture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was incredible. Like so big, it becomes a little bit perverse, you know?
Yeah.
So you go, that's so big. It's like, is that too big?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or is it, but there'd be no point doing it okay big.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
They could get somebody else to do it okay
yeah,
big.
And
but
if you're going to do it big, then you might as well make it.
Let's go there.
Let's go there. Even in its glamour, I try to make it a little bit like,
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly.
When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things that you love are checked by experts. Not just any experts, specialized experts. Real people who love this stuff. With real hands-on authentication experience.
So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back.
Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other.
With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
So you mentioned the Valentino show. You do Marc Jacobs all the time, and everyone has always got their eyes on that show. You do. You really are like the guy for
fashion,
you know, for
guy.
Rhea, for runway hair. How the hell do you keep your energy up? Because you hit New York, you hit Paris, you hit Milan. You probably go to London too.
Yeah, I just got back from China yesterday. We did the show in Valentino last week, and I was.
Oh my God, those silver faces were amazing.
Me and Pat were on the plane. I said. We decided to go on a certain airline. It was like we were on the plane for 44 hours there and back. I was like,
oh my
do
God.
You realize we've just been on a plane?
Oh
like,
gosh. You circled the world.
Yeah, basically. I suppose I still really enjoy the creative process. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I really enjoy what I do and I really enjoy collaborating with people like Pat or Steven Meisel and all these great people that are still, I'm lucky, the people I work with are still very passionate about what they do
mm-hmm.
and really get off on whether it's just us that enjoy it. And, you know, we still enjoy that process of working with a model and creating them and creating a fantasy. And I think I'm very lucky to be around very creative people. I, you know, to work with Pat every day is amazing because she's amazing at what she does. And we're both British, and so we have the same kind of references mm-hmm. and we come from similar kind of backgrounds. And so it's there's a sort of like we get each other. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then I, too, admire how far she's taken her craft.
Yeah.
And even every day, the silver faces, I was like, they're amazing.
Yeah.
They could be so wrong, but they're not. They're so right.
Yeah.
And I think she's probably the only one that can pull that off.
Yeah. What about like bringing new blood into the mix? Like, are there people that you haven't worked with yet that you want to? Or do you ever worry that you're too comfortable in your bubble of your people that you like? Is there someone you'd want to work with that you haven't had the chance to?
you know, I don't think the fashion industry stops and ends with people like my era and what I've done. When I look at young people, they're doing it their way. And there's a whole new wave of new hairdressers and makeup artists and photographers and designers that are doing their thing, and they're really doing it in their way. And they could only, I couldn't do it in their way because they're doing it in their way now.
What about designers? Are there any young designers you're like, oh, I want to do their show?
Yes, there is. But if I want to do it, it's because I like it. And then they're probably doing it good already. Do you know what I mean? So yeah, I feel like I probably wouldn't be able to do it as good as them because I...
Yeah.
Somewhere like, say, the 80s is back, right? Mm-hmm. But I lived the 80s. So, to me, it's slightly a pastiche era.
Yeah, but they think it's still...
But they think it's kind of fresh because it's
like Visco Girls we were just talking about.
Yeah, it's like if you wore it once the first time, you don't get to go around a second time.
Yeah, because you do it in a different way. When I do 80s way, I kind of know it because I was there.
Yeah.
Where if you're 25, you have a fresh take on it because you weren't there and you see it in a different way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you can never look at... I never want to look at young people and go, oh, I did it better that...
No.
Because they are doing it in a fresh take.
The same way in the 90s you were probably doing the 70s, yeah. But it was redux.
Yes, yes, exactly.
And so have you ever thought about moving beyond hair? Have you ever worked with any other art forms, or is there anywhere you want to expand your art to? I always feel like you'd be a sculptor on the side.
Yeah,
a sculptor.
He's a fine artist.
Yeah, I mean, I did a few exhibitions at the Met.
You know, the Metro, no biggie.
You know, they do the costume.
He spelled it out for me. The Metropolitan.
You did the hair for
the McQueen exhibit or whatever.
I did the McQueen, yes, and then I did a punk one, and I did a Schiaparelli Prada one. And
that one was great.
Yeah, and I actually didn't use hair in two of them. I sort of worked with different forms.
Oh, cool.
You know, the McQueen one, there was no hair.
Yeah, it didn't look like... So what was that?
So I kind of worked with Mars because I sort of worked with Alexander McQueen a lot. So I kind of knew his kind of take on beauty, and I didn't really feel that I could do it justice, the exhibition, with hair. So I kind of worked with different kind of people to create sort of leather and fetish, and there actually wasn't one hair mask in it, but it had like sort of spike coming out the top, and then sort of different sort of, they were all kind of weirdly fetishy. Some mm-hmm. were beautiful, some were a little bit sort of like macabre, I felt they sort of would encompass his aesthetic of a beauty, but I felt it would be better to do it in different things. So I use my aesthetic and my kind of balancing, but then would work with people that could craft it. So to your point, I did work with a different medium and kind of really enjoyed the process. It was really nice working with a museum and mm-hmm. all the different people that go into making that thing work. It was a challenge, and it was it's difficult because you're working with 120 kind of mannequins, and there were different rooms, and you don't get to see it till it's put on. So it's not a trial and error kind of thing. You have to kind of design it and keep going for meetings, and there's different kind of, you know, you're sat in a room when you have to pinch moments. You're sat in a room with Andrew Bolton, who's the person behind those exhibitions, and the head of the exhibition, and Anna Winter, and all these different people that are voices in getting that thing done, and you're the voice as well. And you know, it's kind of like, wow, I got to step up to the plate.
Yeah, it's a long way from hanging out with like David and Corinne.
Yeah, and also being that suburban boy in a school, not feeling kind of thing. I still sort of think, how did I get here?
Do you have those pinch me moments?
Oh yeah, all the time. When I was in China, when I was at the Great Wall, I went to the Great Wall one morning. I was like, how am I in the Great Wall of China? Do you know what I mean?
If they could see me now.
That's really cool.
I mean,
cool.
There's lots of those things. I just sort of, I never sort of take it for granted of what this job has allowed me and who I've met through it. Do you know what I mean? I'm always like, wow.
You're not jaded by like to speaking with Anna Wintour about hair. So you are a very private person, which I love. You're not taking a million Instagrams of you like on the toilet or like you know, cooking or, you know, and I mean, honestly, in beauty, that it feels like that's the way people are getting fame now and getting respect of some sort. But as we have you in the studio, what do people not know about you? Like, tell us something like, what are you doing like on a Saturday afternoon? Doesn't have to be like sorted. Just like, do you like have a favorite TV show? Are you like hooked on like, I don't know, junk food?
No, I'm not. I try not to be a junk food. I mean, I can. I mean, I have to keep away from. I probably am on a Saturday afternoon. I'm probably preparing dinner for me and my partner. Do you know what I mean? Uh-huh. I do you love cooking.
Cook. Yeah, you going out and like doing the shopping and stuff.
Yeah, I love all that. I mean, I don't think my life is grand, but it's probably grander than other people's. But it's not. I don't require it.
Okay, where do you shop? This will make the determination of how grand you are.
Well, then all these
are.
Like people are going to be like freaking out, hang out at Citarella or something. Like,
yeah. Waiting. He's a Trader Joe's kind of guy, I can tell.
I do not see you at TJ's.
I'm not, but I think it's good. I can't believe how reasonable Trader Joe's is.
I can see at the back of the line with your little basket and like the Hawaiian shirt kind of next to you.
You know all those candies and cookies they have? I bet you'd come out of there and you'd be like, I could make hair out of this. Like we see Marc Jacobs next season. It's like got like Tubuck Chuck in the hair.
I just like to, when I go supermarket shop, I like to be on my own. So there's no, I like to sort of wander and peruse all the stuff and then pick it. And then I kind of like to go home and cook it slowly. And I find it really relaxed. So, I mean, work does take up a lot of time. Like after this, I get back, I've got a cat, I feed him.
Oh, my next question was about the cat. Yeah. Okay, let's move on. Let's talk about the cat. Okay, you have a cat. I know about the cat, I think, from like a photo shoot or maybe your Instagram. What's your cat's name? How old? Coloring?
His name's Ned. He's 5 next year.
Oh.
And I love having him. I mean, it's not easy
Orangey
having him.
Orangey?
Yes. He's a ginger and he's a strong character. I shouldn't really have a cat in the amount I travel.
I feel like
travel.
Ned's a little bit mean. He you have a little, look in your eye.
He's a little guy. He's racing.
Yeah, because you're not home.
Yeah.
Cats are
but
social creatures.
He does
creatures.
Have a babysitter.
Oh, good. Okay.
So he's very spoiled. I mean, I went to pick him up at the shelter or the place when I got him. They said, do you think you'd be able to look after him? As I sort of drove off in a car, a driven car, I was like, I think he'll be fine. And he
has people for that.
And he has a little, he's an outside cat. So he goes out on the terrace.
Oh, okay.
And he has a little cat flap and he has friends out there and he goes and stays next door.
Who are his friends? He should have a play date with Jess's cat,
he's
Janetta.
He's got two cat friends next door and they come in and, you know, it's a big social thing. So I love having him. I don't know. I love going to the movies in the morning.
Oh, isn't that indulgent?
I just love that. Going at 11 o'clock or something, just sitting there and the cinema's only got two people in it or something. And
are you happy to go by yourself?
Yeah, I love it.
What's a movie that you really enjoyed recently?
What was the movie? I went to see the Judy Garland with Renée Zellweger, about Judy Garland.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What'd you think?
I loved her in it. I mean, where did she go, Renée Zellweger?
Where have you been, Renée?
Do you know what I mean?
But I think that was the New York Mag headline. It was something about like, she's back or she left. She's Renée's found,
Yeah.
But she was great. I really liked,
What's
great.
Your movie snack order? Do you order the popcorn at 11?
I don't. I'm very...
He's a healthy man. Okay, he's not talking.
I actually don't like people eating. I can't bear the smell of popcorn around me.
Oh, okay.
Do you bring like a water in? Or like nothing.
Water. I'm very like, I can't bear when people chat during the trailers.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
We're here for the movies, people.
We're here for the movies.
Once the trailers start, the chatting must stop. But people still think it's like texting time, chatting time. No, it's a whole experience.
And I think,
experience.
Is it going to calm down before the movie? I get all
get
anxious.
You know? You don't know if you should shush them?
Yeah, I know.
That's so funny.
So...
Okay, so no popcorn for you, but we have to know.
But we're going to get him like AMC gift certificate.
No, we are not. Product-wise, you've been working with Redken for years, so I know there's lots of that in your kit. But what are some of your favorites these days?
Yeah, I've sort of mentioned Redken, which has been a huge actually part of my sort of latter career. I say latter, we've been in partnership now. I've been with them 15 years.
Which is just, we should point out, is special in this industry because usually it's like, they work together for 3 years, moving on.
And that's like the next like hottest person on Instagram.
Yeah, and a new contract.
They've been really loyal to me and they're so supportive to work with a sort of big brand and Redken's a L'Oreal sort of brand, to work with such a sort of big brand and then being so supportive of my sort of like alternative idea of beauty.
Yeah.
And also sort of understand it. I mean, and for me to understand them, it's been like a real sort of learning thing to me understand about. I work with them on product development and I work with them on their sort of campaigns and pictures. So I sort of then have to turn my head to sort of how a hairdresser out of New York might want to see fashion portrayed. So I have to then get in another headspace, which is really kind of a challenge and a good challenge, you know what I mean? And then, say, develop products. And they're very good at picking up on if they see me using a product that maybe is not theirs, or mixing up a couple of products backstage to create a product, that they will start developing that product.
Yeah, you want grittier hairspray? Okay, fine. We'll put some weird grit in your hairspray,
you know,
Guido.
Before sort of dry shampoos and sort of texturizing sprays, they would see me sort of putting powders and spray together and making this sort of texture. And out of that, we sort of developed sort of windblown and sort of a texturizing spray. Or when they sing wet looks and shine, then we sort of start developing products that if they see it being used for more than one season,
Putting conditioner in the hair. What do we do?
Exactly,
or whatever it is.
Yeah. And that's a creative side of it, though, developing that. And it's fun and you get to sort of play with all different sort of stuff. And yeah, it's been a great, an ongoing sort of thing. And so we have sort of things in the future that we're sort of working on.
What's
together.
In your hair right now? It's just like gritty and cool.
Actually, what is in my hair?
It stayed when you moved it.
Is Triple Take 32, which is our new hairspray, I think.
Oh, hairspray.
I've got one for you.
Oh, oh my gosh, you brought us some products. So
this is very exciting.
I know. Triple Pure 32.
Ooh.
So this is our new...
Do you love the names they come up with? You make this great product. Like,
they always have numbers. Yeah.
So this is, Triple Pure 32 is a neutral, neutral fragrance hairspray.
Oh, okay.
So it hasn't got that bad whiff to it. And when you're backstage and there's
Elnet clouds everywhere.
12 cans of hairspray going off. This is much appreciated. So why did I tell you about Triple Pure?
Because you brought us a present.
Because I asked you about your favorite.
Oh, right. So at the moment, when a new product comes out, it's my go-to product.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And hairspray is a product that people often sort of like dismiss as old-fashioned or that. But I actually kind of use it in most styles. Even if it's natural, I might spray a bit on my hand and run it through the hairs. It's like a chef when he's just finishes something, he sprinkles a bit of...
A little Maldon sea salt at the end.
Exactly. Or a little lemon zest.
Mm-hmm.
Or mine's a little Triple Pure 32.
I like nice. That.
A true finishing
and
spray.
And you smelled gorgeous when you got in the elevator.
Right.
Okay. What does he wear? What do you wear?
I wear Aveda Chakra 2.
Oh, one of their oils from like...
I think it's called a vaporizer.
It's like a spray, right? It's a mist. Yeah.
Yeah, they're like aromatherapy mists.
Yes.
Yeah.
So everybody's just chill around you.
I don't know. It's like, I was just saying how nice the smells are there. So.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, Guido, you have had a very long day, a very packed schedule. We appreciate you fitting us in.
My pleasure.
This rare conversation. you got to get home to Ned.
Right? And he's waiting. He's whining.
Yeah. Thank you, Guido.
Thank
you.
We hope you enjoyed the show. It's your reviews and feedback that help us make the podcast even better. Head over to iTunes to rate and review us, or email your thoughts to info@fatmascara.com.
We also want to answer your beauty questions and hear what products you love. To share a Razor One product review or to ask a beauty question, email us at info@fatmascara.
If you send it as a voice memo file, we can even share your voice on the podcast. You can also do that by leaving us a voice message. Our phone number in the United States is 646-481-8182.
Thanks so much for listening.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.